Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Trampling Hall podcast. I am your host, Misha Globerman. Trampling Hall is a lecture series. It takes place in a bar in Toronto. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, but the one rule is that unlike most lecture series, they cannot be professionally expert on the topic on which they are lecturing. This is what sets us apart in the very competitive lecture podcast universe. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. We've been doing the live show in Toronto. We've been doing Trampling Hall for forever, like for over 15 years. And people often ask how the show has changed since we started it. And the answer is actually kind of disappointing because it actually hasn't changed. The very first show, Trampling Hall, emerged, I think in a lot of ways, fully formed from the brain of Sheila Hetty. And it came out, and at the very first show, we had three lectures. We had questions and answers from the audience. It was quite similar to what it is now. And people ask how long it took to build up the audience, because the show sells out every show now. But in fact, it sold out at the very first show. Sheila just sent an email to everybody she knew. And the email, I remember very specifically, said, "We're doing the show. Please don't think of it as the sort of thing you have to come to. Feel free to stay home." And it turned out that that particular marketing pitch was what rocketed us to success. So there we go. Feel free to use that strategy for anything that you are trying to sell. So anyway, we've been doing it forever. It's a great show for people who like variety, but also want to do basically the same thing every month for 15 years. Once again, I should warn you, this podcast might contain mature language. And now I'll introduce the lecturer for this episode. The topic is world and spiritual history, and the lecturer is Haida Aid.
Hello, everybody. Now, one thing I can't do is talk as fast as Misha. So, my name is Haida Aid, and I'm 76 years old. So, even by today's statistics, I'm in the last third of my life. And that has brought out the already existing reflective nature of that I have. And I want to tell you something. Some things I've learned make sense to me. One being that we live in both a material and a spiritual world, which in our understanding run parallel, sort of on parallel tracks, and are perceived in a kind of double vision. Until, on rare occasions, they meet and we see clearly. Let me illustrate this from my own life. I was born in 1936 in Austria. And only 2 years later, this was part of Germany. My father came from an entrepreneurial family based in Vienna. My mother came from a very creative, artistic family of writers, actors, musicians, etc., based in Berlin. Where did they meet? On the train. My father worked in the family business, and my mother was a dancer in the modern dance company of Mary Wigman. I am the first of their seven children. Now, I was born into a time and place of vast changes with incredible violence soon to come. Very early, as a little girl, I sensed that in the lives of the people around me, there were painful tensions. But I also learned that a well-behaved child absolutely does not ask any personal questions. In 1923, at the age of 16, my father joined the National Socialist Party, or movement then, and later when this became a party and came to power, the first few thousand members were given a golden pin and were often used ceremonially, for example, at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. So, if you were a Golden Pin member, it was very difficult for you to leave the party. As a matter of fact, you'd be considered a traitor. So, my mother, who came from an artistic circle containing many Jews, never joined the party. And my father considered this offensively disloyal. Then in 1939, World War II started. We lived in Vienna, but we had a farm in the backwoods of Austria where we spent the summers. And we moved there permanently with my mother when my father was conscripted as an anti-aircraft gunner to Scheveningen in the Netherlands. And that's where I started school, out there in the country. Now, Austria was, and pretty well still is, a Catholic country, and daily life in the villages centered around the ceremonies and faith of the Catholics. Every day after school, the local padre taught tired, squirming children to memorize the catechism, which was set up in question and answer. Now, when eternity invades the temporal world, you know it. On my way home from school one day, I passed a church and I asked a little classmate, 6 years old, why do you cross yourself? And he said, it helps to end the war. And this is how I started to go to catechism lessons, with the grudging permission of my parents. The elderly priest stood on the steps before the kids and read. Question, what is the purpose of man? Answer, the purpose of man is to love God and enjoy him forever. Now, it was as if lightning struck me, and I heard. One of the children giggled. The priest took the catechism and hit him on the head. Time moved on, farm life suited us kids, and two more children were born in our family. But then, bombers started to fill the air above our area, and we went out to watch, and we watched the pursuit planes going in and out between them, and sometimes they got one, and it would crash in flames. And I remember very clearly a burning body coming down from the sky in a parachute. My father was away with our brave soldiers killing those other bad soldiers. Friends pointed out that we could hear the Stalin's organ in the north, in the east, and you could. And those who don't use that expression, the Stalin's organ was a very big machine cannon, and you could hear it rumbling. The Russians, who were considered particularly violent, were coming closer. People who were able to make it happen fled west. My father's brother, who was with the SS, appeared and hustled my mother and our six children, ages 9 down to an infant, into a truck. On we went, trying to go west, where we had a grandmother. That was the aim. And, you know, you took tremendous chances to make it there, but that's what we did. However, we were diverted because of an air raid. Didn't take too long till we realized that we were in the actual war zone. I remember looking out the canvas of this truck in which I was, and the truck was officially transporting barrels of oil. I looked out and I saw a burning bus tumble down over the embankment of the street, and then I saw burning buildings, and I heard gunfire and shouting and running around. And then several SS men came and stopped the truck. We had to get out and line up by the roadside. The SS men each pointed their gun at us. I didn't know that that's the way to make you stop. I thought we were all going to be killed. I was sure this was my end, and yet I was not controlled by fear. We did make it to our grandmother's. The place was overcrowded with refugees, primarily children. And this is where we experienced the Americans marching in, mainly in tanks. And we were lying in the furrows of a plowed field. I remember a black man sitting on top of one of the tanks, and that was the very first time in my life I saw a black man. On May the 8th, the war ended, and a few weeks of anarchy followed, and those were quite something, but I don't have time to tell you about it. Then Austria became a state of its own, but of course occupied by four occupation forces. And for the first time in our lives, we were really hungry. There just wasn't enough food around. Today, I'm grateful that I experienced this because I know what it's like. And I wasn't so badly damaged that I have had to suffer from it from the rest of my life. It only lasted about a year. After a few months, my father returned from the war, but he was immediately imprisoned by the British for his party membership. After a few months, I'm sent with a young woman illegally from one occupation zone to another, and I was very afraid of that. But I had to go because my family wanted me to explore with this young woman in her early 20s, and my sister, a year younger, was also along to see whether we could walk back to our farm. Now, that would have been several weeks unless we managed to get on a train or something like that. Couldn't count on it. And as I was really afraid and my whole body felt funny, we came to a little stream. It was a beautiful, clear mountain stream. And as if it was today, I remember there was in an eddy, there were some beautiful trout swimming around. And again, I had this experience that something like a hot rush went through my body, and I just knew that I was part of something much bigger than war or walking or food or growing up, even daily life. These experiences don't last, but you know that you've had them. And when my father returned from political imprisonment, he came back to economic ruin and family hostility. I went to school, or we went to school, and history there ended at the beginning of the First World War. We were just not taught, and it was very insensitive to speak about it. And you especially did not ask your parents what they'd done or anything like that. And I started to reflect on this, and I thought, what am I going to do with my life? And you'll find out in a couple of minutes how it turned out that it was very It was very, not a good plan, but I planned to be a nun. Okay? I wanted to be a nun because I wanted to really study and religion and pray and so on to make the world better. When I got to Canada, I did have access to libraries, and I became obsessed with reading about the Holocaust. But even then, I kept it a secret from my family that I was doing this. I began to feel terribly guilty, and at the same time, I felt terribly guilty for reading about it, because that was something bad. Okay, I was not supposed to investigate this. When I met Jewish people, I was just incapable of being natural with them. In my mind, because of the Holocaust, they could do no wrong, whether they were tradespeople, fellow students, workers, and I couldn't truly connect with a Jewish person as a fellow human being. My father remained anti-Semitic all his life. He also remained within German culture and had a terrible time, and so I had a terrible time marrying a Canadian. But I did, and he's sitting in the audience today. And he is a classical musician, and he pursued a life of a classical musician, and together we had 6 children. One more thing. Throughout my life, it's okay, right? One more thing. Throughout my life, I had been challenged by many episodes of severe depression. It's hard to believe today, but I'm afraid it's very true, and to the point of pathological withdrawal, both physical and mental. For years, I tried to change by immersing myself more and more into spiritual practices, but it was impossible for me to prevent recurring depressions. There were good things about it. In retrospect, I met several truly compassionate people. Our children both suffered from this, as you can imagine, and learned. And carrying me, his beloved, in this condition made my husband the emotionally intelligent person that he is. Fast forward many years to 2007. I entered a 2-year period of unrelenting depression, reducing me more than ever before. I finally was admitted to Mount Sinai, and after 3 weeks referred to Baycrest to spend 4 months in a day hospital there. And there I got slowly better. And then 2 things happened. Through a coincidence, I discovered ceramics. Whether it was working with the earth or my young teacher that got me interested in ceramics the way I have never been interested in learning anything else, and I was already 74. I'll never know what it was. This is my 3rd year into it, and whenever I'm in the studio, I feel in a state of grace. The second thing was meeting a Jewish man named Archie. He and I were in a weekly aftercare program at Baycrest. In this particular group, they have many groups of people who have been there for 4 months, and they can come once a week if they want to. In this particular group, at that time, I was the only non-Jewish person, and there were 4 Holocaust survivors. A situation developed in which it came out that my father was a Nazi. Silence. One man said, "Your father could have killed my father." Silence. One woman said, "I can never forgive those who murdered my entire family." Silence again. Then frail Archie hoists himself up on his walker And moving across the circle towards me says, "Heide, I just want to give you a hug." As he put his arms around me, I felt permission to let go of something that I myself hadn't done, but which had been such a burden for me all my adult life. So in this sense, this man's love brought eternity into history. Archie died a few months later, last June. I made a bowl for in his remembrance in ceramics and took it to his wife, or to his widow now, and she told me that he wrote poetry. And so I want to close my little talk with a poem that I found in this book. What is man? What is man that anyone should be mindful of him, especially now when we can, it seems, create machines to be anything, almost, that man has been, and do what man has done. Do it faster, usually. More accurately, often even better. What indeed is man, except perhaps that only he of all the creatures has a need to be touched in troubled times, or, more important still, has the desire to touch another unselfishly.
That's Heide Aid, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are there any questions? Yes, you, ma'am. Yeah.
How did you get away from the SS officers who were pointing the gun at you?
The question is, how did you get away from the SS officers who were pointing the gun?
I repeat it.
I repeat it more for people in the back of the room who might not have. I'm going to keep doing that.
Don't forget, I was 9 years old, but I do remember this very clearly. Pointing the gun at you meant don't run away, okay? I didn't know that. And I suspect that my uncle, who was also an SS man, had something with them that they let us go. Okay, but this is me looking back as an adult. So we did get back into the truck and went on. But the young man that drove us, they took him. And I sometimes pray for him because I don't know what happened to him. He might still be alive or not. It was also very loose who punished whom for what and how in this end at the chaos. It was not very well controlled.
Does that answer your question? Sure it does. Yes, you ma'am, yes.
Did you ever talk to your family
So the question is whether she talked
yes,
to her family.
Yes, did
about
I this? Ever talk to my family and my brothers and sisters? Well, my brothers and sisters were all younger than my... Yes, we talk a lot about it. To my father, he would, when I was younger, he would say, das ist nichts für Kinder, you don't, that's not for children. And later on he said, you can't understand what it was like. And I didn't want to go into my father, but my father, for whatever reason, was authoritarian to the nth degree, and he was a very angry person. I always say in our marriage, everybody has a right to be angry, but what's wrong is to be an angry person. Well, anything made him angry, and he hit and things like that. So he was not a good person to ask.
So you didn't talk to your father, and you talked to your siblings a bit, but I guess they went
to my
very
siblings.
Little.
We talk now because we speculate and we have not 100% the same experiences because we weren't always in the same place. For example, when the Americans came in, one of my sisters had gone out to beg for eggs, and she was somewhere else, and she saw soldier taking his uniform off and running away naked. I mean, it's dramatic. It's probably not one of the worst things, and they probably found him and all that. But those things, and what did this mean, and what did that mean, and what... And my father talked most, I think, to my oldest brother, who is number four, but we were very close. Also put him into a terrible, terrible conflict about loyalty.
Right. What led you to ask that question? What were you thinking about?
I was just thinking about sibling relationships and how complicated they can be, how people can have different experiences and different ages.
Right. So they have different perspectives.
Did that help you at all through the depression, or if they went
through the depressions?
Yeah.
No. We'd have to talk about that some other time. Everything has to do something to do with everything, I believe, but it is also something that sits in the body. Okay? Because I know, having had this, and I'm being told that not to expect that it'll never come back, you meet other people, and some people have had wonderful childhoods and whatnot, and other people have gone through horrible things. And some people have gone through unspeakable things. What I went through is nothing in comparison to a lot of people. And they had to see their parents murdered in front of them and things like that. And so, and they're not depressed, okay?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. It's not like a causal, it's not like a direct causal thing where the one
it's not direct causal,
yeah,
no.
Sure.
However, we are seven. And there's only really one who doesn't have something a little bit in the emotional
right.
life, so a little bit wrong. Yeah, or a little much wrong.
Okay. Well, maybe it's nice to know that one kid in seven can come out of that. Yes, you all the way in the back. Yes, you, sir. What? How did you end up married to a Canadian living in Canada?
I met him through a fellow student. I was fortunate enough to, first I worked here, but then I was fortunate enough to go to university, and a fellow student took me to an after church party that I didn't want to go, stay home, so I went there, and that's when it happened. I met him.
So you met him at a party, and the
yeah.
same way we all end
in
up
a
marrying
home.
A Canadian.
A
you meet
home.
Them
yeah.
at a party. That's what happened.
It was in the student's home, right. So it was relatively harmless, with big consequences.
Anything else? Any other questions? Oh yes, from behind the bar. Yes.
All right. Little disclaimer. I am German. If my father was still alive, the actually be older than you.
kind of a very unique situation. Basically, everything that you said is parallel to some of the stories that I've heard. And my own father making a right turn from that legacy of the war was becoming a Canadian. So, what role did becoming a Canadian change your perception of identity? Who you are, what it meant to be?
So did becoming a Canadian, we're assuming, did you become a Canadian?
Yes, I did become a Canadian. Mm-hmm.
And did that change, and for your father, that changed things when he changed from as a German, became a Canadian. Did you have a similar, did anything change?
Well, you see, your father would be older than me, but not a generation older, would he?
No, he was born in 1947, so...
Yes, so that means he would be 9 years younger than myself. That's different because he might have been in the war, because at the end they conscripted 14-year-olds and... Yes.
Oh, he was conscripted, okay.
Yes, so it's an in-between, but my father also became a Canadian. The reason he told us that he came to Canada was that he thought there was going to be a Third World War. And the reason he was able to come was that we had so many children. 2 years after 1945, all these political prisoners were just discharged unless... It had been proven that they had committed war crimes, because there were all these able-bodied men, and so many able-bodied men had been killed, and they had to be fed, and they had to be guarded. It was so he was then no longer a party member, or not even an ex-party member. So, because somebody asked me, how did he get in as a Nazi? Well, that's how he got in.
Because they let him out. He was kept as a prisoner, but then they let him out, and then...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's how he got to Canada. Right. And the fact, I remember the person that interviewed just saying, oh, these will all be Canadians, because we were there like the organs, like organ pipes, you know. Organ pipes, yeah.
And so but the underlying question was whether it changed anything for you. Like, was that a big thing to think of yourself as Canadian? Does that change?
That is a very interesting question. When I'm in Canada, I certainly feel Canadian. When people ask me, what are you? I think they're asking me, where are you born? Mm-hmm. Because you don't ask each other, what are you? It's obvious that you're Canadian, right? Or for most people. So then I think that I say I was born in Austria. When I travel overseas, I feel very Canadian and not American. But no. They are wonderful Americans. No, I said I don't want any us and them, okay? Yeah. So not even with the Americans.
So
I'm working on that one.
So as a Canadian, you can imagine that it might be possible to sympathize with Americans. That seems like...
Yes.
Okay, all right, good. Any other questions? Anything else? Yes, you, ma'am, right up here.
When was the last time that you had that feeling of double vision?
When did you last have that double vision feeling?
Double vision is... I am interested in both. It's one of the things that I think a lot about, and I do. Bill, my husband, says it's like having a musical talent. I mean, some people are very easily addressed by the spiritual world, and I think I'm like that. Other people would have to judge that. But obviously I also have to be interested in groceries and clothes and studying and things like that, subscribing to a magazine or whatnot. So that's the material world, the practical world. So you can't totally concentrate on the two at the same time, but I'm always aware of it, and I have certain practices and so on. But sometimes, in these experiences, and you know, I'm sure they're different for different people, and they're not necessary. God can do anything He wants, whoever He is. And He exists if we believe in Him or not, or He doesn't exist if we believe in Him or not. So I feel that some of us are given this knowledge that you can't really put it into words, except you just know.
And you'd asked about a most recent experience. Is that what you'd asked about? Like you weren't satisfied by the stories in the lecture, but you wanted like a fresher one, or was there?
because she shared a couple of memories of moments.
Right.
Yes.
Of being very aware of that sort of double vision.
And yes.
There was a recent.
Does that still happen, or are those like?
Yes,
like
it still happens, and it. I'm not. I guess I didn't make myself completely clear in my talk. I didn't want to talk so much about the double vision, but about what in the East is called enlightenment, or, you know, a moment. But I did call my talk double vision, so if I ever give it again, I have to change the title.
we'll end on that valuable lesson. Ladies and gentlemen, Haida Aid, ladies and gentlemen. Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Margot Williamson. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Prince Nifty. Trampoline Hall is a Sumo Audio podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and the World Wide Web. Sumo Audio has another great podcast about chips. It's called Chips, and if you like chips, you might like that. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.